our podcast this week, we chat to a driver. I don't know why that would be of interest to anyone. We're a movie podcast. We're not Top Gear. Oh, a driver. Adam. We chat to Adam Driver. That makes much more sense. Plus, all the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast of things. Everything is fine. Just fine. Nothing to get worried about. It's all good. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning who also think everything is fine. Just fine. All good. Nothing to worry about. First up, we have the rage-fueled, career-killing, ranty machine known only as John Nugent. But there's no rage this week. Why? Because everything is fine. Just fine. Nothing to worry about. It's all good, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it's fine.
All good.
It's really fine.
We're all happy here.
We're totally fine.
It's all good. Next up, we have our geek queen, a lady whose favourite episode of the TV hit Supernatural is not just the one where Sam and Dean take off their shirts and then roll around in the mud for a little bit. That's a good one, though. It's the one where everything is fine. Just fine. All good. Nothing to worry about. Isn't that right, Helen O'Hara?
You know, there's lots of episodes that start that way, and then it usually turns out there's a gigantic monster.
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
I haven't seen that one.
It's probably fine.
Is it a good one?
They're all good, Chris. You know that.
Yeah.
Apparently they're tackling Nazi necromancers this week. I just mentioned that in passing.
Really?
Yep.
Genuine episode.
Genuine episode, apparently.
Not allusion to anything else going on at the moment.
Apparently that's what's happening. I haven't seen it yet, but that is the word on the street.
A Nazi necromancer.
Yep. The worst kind of necromancer.
Right, we have a question that is also fine. It's just fine. It's good. This is a question. Hey, it's a question about laughter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
I remember laughter.
This is from at Liono32 via Twitter. And I will say, in preparation for our answers being rubbish, more so than usual, that we had another question that we had lined up for this podcast, and I killed it at the last minute. Now, I haven't killed it. I've pushed it back.
You've tabled it.
I've tabled it for a couple of weeks hence.
In the American sense, not the British sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, what's the difference?
Well, in the...
Killed or tabled?
Yeah, in British... No, kill. Tabled.
Killed's the same, right?
Killed is the same. Okay. Yeah. But in the British terminology, if you table something, that means to table motion. That means to put it on the table. Let's discuss it. Where in America, if you table something, it means put it aside and not discuss it.
I've got it. So I've tabled the tabling.
Yes.
I've double tabled.
You've double tabled.
I've table squared.
Table squared.
I certainly have. So this is from at Liono32. We'll get to that question in a couple of weeks' time. So this is one we just pulled off Twitter. Pod question. What would you say is the best comedy film franchise? Now, this is from Liono32. Liono32 says, I'd say Wayne's World, hands down. Interesting. Wrong. But interesting. Also, interesting question because there aren't that many comedy film franchises, I would say. Mm.
And very, very few that have gone past two films.
Mm-hmm.
Usually for good reason.
Yep. So how many have gone past two films?
The Hangover.
Austin Powers, Hangover.
Austin Powers,
Naked Gun.
Naked Gun, yeah. Naked Gun.
Police Academy. Mm.
I feel like Naked Gun is a good shout here. Like
Human Centipede.
Oh, no, Chris, no. Please, no.
Fast and Furious.
Not this week.
Yep.
Hey. Oh, wait.
Oh, intentionally funny. Intentionally funny comedies.
I would say Naked Gun is not a bad shout. I think those are pretty solid.
Pretty solid.
I laughed even at the third one.
Shall we impose some rules here?
Okay.
What's a franchise? See, now, are you saying that a franchise is more than two films? Or once you have a second film, who was I speaking to recently? Oh yeah, for the producer of Jack Reacher 2. I said the producer Don Granger, is Jack Reacher becoming a franchise dependent on this movie, the sequel, being a success? And he said, it's a sequel, we're already a franchise. You idiot. He didn't say that, but the subtext was clear.
It usually is. Yeah.
So once you have a sequel, is it a franchise? Because if so, then Anchorman is a franchise. You know, or do you have to go three and beyond? Carry On, for example.
Carry On had some great films in it and just like an astonishing amount of dreck as well.
Mm.
I have a lot of affection, possibly that I wouldn't have if I went back and watched some of them, but I have a lot of affection for some of those.
Yeah, I don't want to revisit.
I don't want to look again, just in case I'm wrong.
Given that Carry On Columbus, the last one, is one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was.
And I kind of want to, you know, I've fond memories of so many of the
Carry On
films.
Yeah, I'm just going to trust that Up the Khyber and Cleopatra and Screaming and so on were good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just never going to revisit them to find out. I think that seems like the best option.
I think Screamy would hold up.
I think Up the Khyber holds up. That dinner party scene. Steady on. Oh.
This is on. Carry On, Follow the Camel. That's a good one. It's got Phil Silvers, isn't it? Which one's got Phil Silvers? I'm going to say that one.
Okay.
You're displaying my knowledge of the Carry On franchise.
How about some of the older ones? Abbott and Costello, the Road 2 movies.
Mm. Yep.
As in the Road 2, you know, Zanzibar.
Road to Wellfield. That was a good one. Right. I like that one.
That's a different. No,
Cornflakes and Enemas.
Not one of the franchise. Chris.
Oh,
Carry On. Come on.
Road to Nowhere.
Zanzibar.
Rio.
Road to Rio.
Road to Rio. Yeah. Hope and Crosby.
Indeed.
Amazing. Yeah, I loved those films when I was a kid. Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah.
Does Chaplin count as a franchise? I mean, the Little Tramp is a recurring character.
I guess he.
People
is.
Were seeing it for him.
Yeah.
You know, that was a.
He was more the Melissa McCarthy of his era.
I don't know who.
A little bit more so. A little bit more so.
I'm not a Chaplin fan.
Oh, Chris.
Come on. Modern Times? Oh, God.
Credibility.
Great Dictator.
I don't have any credibility, John. You know that. I know that. Let's just quit pretending and get on with it. No, I'm not a fan. He's just looking at a moustache.
No.
He's not. He's amazing.
No, he's not.
Rubbish.
Oh, Modern Times.
He's not even the best Chaplin. Ben Chaplin.
I don't think even Ben Chaplin would agree with you.
Of course he would.
Geraldine Chaplin would overrule you. Ben Chaplin would shout you down.
She would look at Ben Chaplin. She'd go, there is a man who had the wherewithal to leave Game On after, what, one season series?
No one is convinced here.
That is a wise decision. He's not faffing
Charlie
around
Chaplin
with a little bowler hat.
The biggest star in the entire world. He, like,
was
transformed,
and then Ben
cinema.
Chaplin supplanted him.
I don't even know how to deal with this post-factual analysis.
You walk down any street, any town in the world with a picture of Charlie Chaplin and a picture of Ben Chaplin, and I'm going to tell you, you're going to get 90% recognition on one of those pictures. We'll walk down the street with a picture of Ben Chaplin and Charlie Chaplin. John, can you Photoshop me a picture of Ben Chaplin looking like Charlie Chaplin, please?
No, stop it. Don't
All
do
right.
it.
So if you incorporate, yeah, okay, so Charlie Chaplin, obviously the best. Obviously, I mean, he just is.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
If we call him a franchise.
There's many things I could call Charlie Chaplin. A franchise is not one of them. I'm kidding, of course. He's awesome.
Yes, of course you
he's
are.
He's awesome.
I don't know. I think it should be more than two, ideally, because I
Three
think...
Three Stooges.
Oh, yeah. Marx Brothers? No.
Marx Brothers? That's a franchise.
That is a franchise.
That's a franchise.
That's a franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. They were sold as the Marx Brothers.
Three
you know.
Amigos are not a franchise. Much as I wish they were.
All those movies, all those great movies.
Oh.
Little Nettie Goes to War. Do you remember that one? That was great. Just because we always say the Three Amigos. All right. So let's split this into two camps.
Okay.
All right. We'll be very, very clear about this. You have to be three films and more.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Sorry, Lion-O-32, but we're taking over your question. We're jettisoning Wayne's World.
Yeah.
One and two. It's not even the best Mike Myers
Airplane
comedy franchise.
Airplane goes out the window as well.
Airplane goes out the window. Mm. They promised us Airplane 3 at the end of Airplane 2. They have not delivered. So therefore, you go. You go to the road to not delivering Airplane 3, Phil. That's where you go. Right. So let's split into two camps. We have an ye olde camp, right?
Right.
For old people. And then we have a modern camp for Police Academy.
Ghostbusters, maybe?
Ghostbusters.
Ooh. Now,
okay,
technically
so,
speaking.
I mean, does a brand count then? So could you go for, say, National Lampoon?
Ooh.
Or Monty Python? You know, I mean, these are not necessarily connected
Monty Python is,
films, but they are sort of a franchise. You are going because of that name.
All right.
Well, if the Marx Brothers is a franchise, then Monty Python is, I suppose.
I should have mailed it to Monty Python. I'm going to accept Monty Python.
Okay.
I was going to throw the Beatles in for a second, so why the hell not accept Monty Python?
Yeah.
Because the Beatles movies are comedies. There's no doubt about that. Apart from Let It Be.
How about Cornetto Trilogy?
Sorry, you just said Cornetto and made me laugh. I don't know why.
I mean, it's a funny ice cream.
It's a funny, yeah. funny
There's no
series.
Doubt about it.
Go in the shops or anything? Cornetto trilogy. Yes. That
yes.
is a franchise.
Yes. Yes.
That's a franchise. Yeah. Right, we're no closer to actually saying which one's the best. So I'm going to...
Well, if we've allied all of these now, then we've got some serious competition, because before we had nothing.
We'd none. So, okay, let's go through.
Because Naked Gun is better than Police Academy, and that's just it.
Yes. As much as I have affection for Police Academy...
You have affection for Police
absolutely
Academy 1.
One. I have affection for Police Academy 1 and Police Academy 3. Everything else can go hang, as far
enough.
As I'm concerned. Especially when Guttenberg was replaced by Matt McCoy.
I mean, what
I mean,
even?
That is... There's a talk about downgrading. Guttenberg to McCoy. I can't think of a recent downgrade as terrible as that. Certainly nothing that happened this week.
No, definitely not.
No major world event which downgraded someone really awesome
no,
for someone absolutely
nothing,
horrendous.
Nothing like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty much unique, I think.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
It's just fine.
Okay.
All right. So, Police Academy's gone.
Yeah.
Austin Powers. I love the first one.
Yeah, but the third one's terrible.
I love the third one. The second one's terrible for me.
All right.
See, that's
way.
Interesting. So that's jettisoned as well.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's inconsistent.
It's
inconsistent.
Right. Yeah.
What were you going to say? You were saying Naked Gun still?
I'm still sticking with Naked Gun. I mean, the third one's weaker, but it's not weak.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, okay, it has some good jokes. All right.
I submit Beverly Hills Cop. Now, I know 2 and 3 really don't quite live up to 1, but still love them.
I quite enjoy 2,
I
3,
love them
though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but 3 is the godfather 3 of that trilogy, really, isn't it?
A little bit.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
No. But, you know, hey, it's your choice, man. You're allowed to make mistakes. It's fine. It's how we grow as people. I am going to say Monty Python. Just skin of the teeth, just because, again, weak third part.
Weak third part.
Meaning of Life. But on the other hand, Holy Grail and Life of Brian are two of the funniest comedies of all time.
Yes.
I don't think any that could be applied to anything else we've said. Even Naked Gun.
Duck Soup.
Oh, modern stuff.
Oh, okay, fine.
But get to the oldies in a second.
Okay, fine.
They died years ago. They can wait. Right, so, yes.
Okay. In that case, I would have to go Monty Python as well.
Judge's Gavel.
And then, like, Meaning of Life has got some amazing stuff
that's
in
good,
it.
Yeah. So. And, of course, if you extend Monty Python as a franchise onto all the individual projects, then you have Nuns in a Run, and it's clearly the winner.
You also have some less
you have
great films.
What, like Fish Caught Wanda?
No, that one's okay.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Yeah.
Remember the follow-up to Fish Called Wanda?
I do remember the follow-up to Fish Called Wanda, Fierce Creatures.
Yes.
Now, I've been reading, recently I just finished Michael Palin's diaries, which was a fraught experience because...
You already did come home and find him reading his diaries. Yeah.
Precisely. And he keeps very unpredictable hours, so it's really hard to read over his shoulder. But I managed to do it successfully. And he's very interesting on the genesis of Fierce Creatures, which just took ages and ages to get going. And they had to do loads of reshoots. And the original director wasn't available, so he'd get Fred Skepsy in to reshoot stuff. And it just feels a bit like Trial by Committee, where Fish Called Wanda wasn't. But it made me want to go back and revisit Fierce Creatures, because I just remember the crushing disappointment when I first saw it. Because I love Fish Called Wanda. And it was really, really sad. So there we go. Judge's Gavel, Monty Python. Right, oldies.
Okay. Well, hang on. If all these other people are franchises, is like Buster Keaton a franchise?
You see, I think Keaton is less of a franchise than Chaplin, because Chaplin had the character, and that was like the thing that people go
but
to.
But the Marx Brothers didn't have one character.
Groucho was basically...
He was
one character, wasn't
playing
he?
Himself, essentially, wasn't he?
Well, in that case, I don't know whether to. I will go, I guess, for the Marx Brothers, because I prefer spoken comedy to physical, and they had a bit of both. Whereas Chaplin obviously only had the physical, and it is glorious, Christopher.
Glorious.
But
glorious.
It's.
He didn't always just have the physical.
I know, great dictator,
you
know.
He has one of the greatest speeches in cinema history.
He does, but...
And even then, I think the physical, you know, you can say a lot more with less. You see something like Modern Times. And
Modern Times
sort of
is great.
Beautiful ending. It's very emotional, and as emotional as any film with words in.
I know. I just like the word
stick
play.
Stick out your poster.
I just like the word play in, you know, A Night at the Opera. Yeah. Or,
I'm going to go with Helen in this one and go for the Marx Brothers.
Hurrah!
And just say it's a shame that Ant and Dec never made a follow-up to Alien Autopsy, because then...
Two follow-ups,
yes. Is it follow-up or follow-ups?
No, it would be follow-ups.
Okay. I mean, we'll have to revisit this question when
they do.
More Cop 3 gets made. the whole thing is blown open, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, everything is up to play for at that point.
Why has Adam Sandler made a sequel to Grown Ups but not Happy Gilmore?
It's one of the great unanswered questions, isn't it?
Mm. I asked him once, because he doesn't do interviews, yeah. And but I was at a press conference he did for Grown Ups 2.
Oh, opposite?
I think. Yes, and I stood up. I said, I'm never going to get a chance to talk to Adam Sandler, my hero, my mate. And I stood up and I said, Mr. Sandler, why haven't you made a sequel to Happy Gilmore? I was very brave.
Oh, and, so brave.
And he said, because he doesn't have the fuels of rage in him anymore that once powered Happy Gilmore and a lot of his early films where he was very ranty. I would say, Adam Sandler, if you want to replenish those reserves of rage, then watch Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2. Right. Yep. I think I may be a record for how long that question was. So apologies, but you know. No, it was all right. That was okay. We have done longer in the past.
Wow. Okay. Great.
We have. I'm sure of it. Anyway, so there you go. That was the question. Lionel was 32's question. We should answer more questions off the cuff for 800 minutes. If you want to have your question read out in the Empire Podcast, then do send them in via Twitter. We're at Empire Magazine. The hashtag is, of course, Empire Podcast. Do use that. Otherwise, we won't see it. I thought, weirdly, I don't think Lionel 32 did. Conspiracy. We're also on Facebook as Empire Magazine, and you can email us as well, podcast@empireonline.com. He did use the hashtag, which is where this week's original question came from via email, so we do read those as well. Right, should we have some movie news? Some movie news.
Sure. Where would we like to start?
Start at the beginning and work your way to the end.
That's a fundamentally unhelpful piece of advice. Thank you, Chris.
How about the beginning of movie news? Go all the way back. Charlie Chaplin has been cast.
Well, there was
George Méliès.
There was some news this week about Spider-Man Homecoming. First of all, we heard a couple of different stories. First of all, we heard that Michael Giacchino will be scoring the film, which has got to be good news for all fans of nice music. And secondly, we heard that Tom Holland, no, not that one, no, not Tom Holland either. Tom Holland.
Whoa.
What's this historian got to do with Spider-Man?
No, not the historian.
The director of Fright Night.
No, not the director.
He's playing
of Fright
Spider-Man.
No.
That's a ridiculous idea.
No, Tom Holland, who plays Spider-Man, is playing Spider-Man in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, yeah.
The same one who played him in Civil War.
He's my joint favorite, Tom Holland.
Oh. And he is apparently signed up for, take a deep breath, 6 films.
Holland.
Yeah, no, Tom Holland, who plays Spider-Man, is signed up for 6 Spider-Man films.
Oh, that makes much more sense.
Yeah, it does.
Than signing Tom Holland for 6
films. Well, I know, that wouldn't make any sense.
Oh, well, this is my favourite comedy franchise right here. this is it.
So, yeah, so that, I mean, that shows a certain amount of confidence, I guess, in the character. But it is kind of standard, I guess.
It is standard. There are probably extras who are signed up for 14 Marvel movies. Yeah. You know, Stan Lee can't get out of his contract, poor guy.
He's 92. Leave him alone. He may not be 92. I apologise if I've got that wrong.
I believe he's 93.
Okay. I'm out of date. Oh, no.
But I might be wrong.
So that does include potential cameos and things. So he's not clear yet, or he claims not to be clear yet, which films those will be. It could be a sort of a Spider-Man trilogy plus 2 Infinity Wars plus Civil War. That could be all. Or it could be that Civil War doesn't count, and this is like 4 Spider-Mans, 2 Infinity Wars, or 3 Spider-Mans, 2 Infinity Wars, and 1 TBC. Who knows?
I don't think there's a freebie in the Marvel Universe. I don't think you just do a film.
No, but maybe that was separate.
Maybe it was separate. Who knows?
Yeah.
6 films. I mean, who signed up for 9 films? Sam Jackson signed up. Sorry, I'm just thinking because... every time my football team, Liverpool, win a game at the moment, Sam Jackson's a Liverpool fan. And without fail, he just tweets about an hour after the result.
Yeah.
Simply all in caps, Liverpool! !! etc., etc., etc. And it just makes me laugh every single time. So, sorry, just chuckled when I thought of that.
Have you seen, you know, Sam Jackson often says, likes to say things like, motherfucker, on his Twitter. But someone has written an article, I think it was Film Drunk, they wrote an article where they showed the different amounts of spelling that he writes, motherfucker. It's actually extraordinary. It's over 100 different spellings of this word. And they've analysed his tweets over the years.
Wow.
The man, like, is so inconsistent with his motherfucker spelling.
Wow. Yeah. It's quite a long word, but I wouldn't say that there are infinite possibilities.
Well, Samuel L. Jackson would disagree, Chris.
Okay. So he signed for 9 movies as Nick Fury.
Yeah.
And the Gruffalo signed for a few, didn't he, as Hulk? Probably around 6.
I don't know
6.
How many. And we know, Scarlet? 6? Was Scarlet 9 as well?
Hemsworth and Evans were 6, and so on and so forth. So, this is not...
This is not unusual, but I just thought it was worthy of mention, at least.
It is worthy of mention.
Zendaya has talked a little bit about her character, and who is rumoured to be, of course, Mary Jane Watson, although it's being advertised as Michelle. She says, my character is not romantic. She's very dry, awkward, intellectual, and because she's so smart, she just feels she doesn't need to talk to people because her brain is so far ahead. So she comes off very weird. She says.
Not same.
Also this week, they finally confirmed Michael Keaton as Birdman, the Vulture, for the film. So that will be exciting for him.
Yes.
To get back into a bird suit, because likes birds.
I thought you were dissing Michael Keaton.
No, and we had that chat with him and a couple of issues ago in the magazine, and he was talking about the owls in his backyard. He is a bird guy, as well as the Birdman.
The owls are not what they seem.
I did enjoy, it was a while back now, but one of our Facebook commenters, when the news came that he was going to be playing a bad guy, they said, the quote from The Dark Knight, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Very good. Very good,
There's some very interesting news. I think interesting is maybe the most diplomatic way to put it.
Okay.
Max Landis is remaking his dad's movie. He is apparently in talks to remake An American Werewolf in London.
That's writing and directing.
Writing and directing, which was originally written and directed by his father, John Landis. So that's a thing.
Another Landis.
Thanks, Yoda. Yeah. Yoda, the movie news Jedi there, just dropping in.
He just comes in. I don't know where he comes from.
What do we make of this?
Well, listen, he is, and I don't think he'd disagree with this, one of the most hated men in Hollywood. But at the same time, he hasn't necessarily deserved that level of hate. So I think we need to kind of give him a chance here. I mean, he's had some great ideas. Obviously, we all loved Chronicle. Mm-hmm. There are reports that original versions of things he's written that maybe didn't turn out so well were a lot better than the version we actually saw. Mm-hmm. And he's got some really exciting projects in the pipeline. So I think we have to kind of hope for the best here, while perhaps noting that this is one of those films that maybe didn't need a remake. Just a thought.
It doesn't. It doesn't need a remake, but I'm certainly intrigued to see what happens here.
Is this going to open the door for sons remaking their father's works? Are we going to see Jaden Smith in a remake of Men in Black or something?
Hey, maybe Max Spielberg will finally get a move on with the Jaws franchise.
Yeah. He's got 15. 19 to make. Yeah. So just remake Jaws and then work your way up to 19, Max. That's the best way to go.
Probably. Yeah. I admit, that seems sensible. In other news, Fantastic Beasts is out in just a couple of weeks. We will finally learn where to find them. And David Yates, the director.
In the guy's suitcase.
Yeah, well, that wasn't... Chris, that's a spoiler. It's a massive, massive spoiler. It's in the trailer.
He opens the suitcase and all the things come
out. Yeah, but maybe there are other ones. I don't know. Anyway.
It's in the suitcase.
You're in his suitcase.
I'm not in his suitcase. Well. I'm in this pod booth, trapped here.
How do we know this isn't in his suitcase?
Yes, it's true. Wow.
Wow. It's a mind bender. Anyway, really, getting back to the news.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. David Yates, who's obviously directing the film, has confirmed that Dumbledore will appear in the sequel. Gasp, shock, horror. We definitely didn't see this coming when we wrote about the prospect of it being made 3 years ago. But it always did seem possible, let's be honest. So he's already been mentioned. You've seen it. If you've seen the trailer, thank you, Chris. You've seen that he was mentioned as someone who stuck up for Newt Scamander, Eddie Redmayne's character, when he faced being expelled from Hogwarts, a fate worse than death, as Hermione would say. And so we know he exists, we know he's around, we know he's active, we know he's already a Hogwarts professor, he's already a grown-up person. We also know that at some point around this time, he made his reputation by defeating the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald. Mm. And this week they have also confirmed that Johnny Depp will be playing the dark wizard Gellert Grindelwald.
That's easy for you to say.
So it does make sense that Dumbledore would at some point turn up to smite him. And we now know he will turn up in film 2 of 5 planned films, and neither to 4 nor to 6 films shall ye make.
So the smiting won't be immediate, is what we're thinking.
Presumably, Gellert Grindelwald is the big bad and will not be fundamentally defeated until film number 5, should they get that far.
Yes.
And so Dumbledore has to kind of work his way up, like Harry did, to become the man who can beat him.
So is it going to be just a couple of scenes with Dumbledore? I mean, is Newt Scamander still the main character?
Presumably.
I would
assume so at this point, certainly. And I think maybe they'll just start working together. I don't know. And
what age is Dumbledore at this stage, then?
Well, he's meant to be 150-odd in the Harry Potter books, I believe, which are set in the 1990s, which would have him born in about the 1840s. So he'd be in his 80s, but sort of...
But he wouldn't look that old.
He wouldn't look that old, necessarily. But he and Grindelwald are supposed to have been at least bosom buddies, if not, let's face it, boyfriends and boyfriends.
Yes.
In their youth. So that would presumably be long past at this point, maybe 20 years in the past. So he should be somewhere, you would think, in his 40s, 50s, if he's the same age as Johnny Depp's Grindelwald, approximately, which he should be, judging by what we know, I believe. And if you're a bigger Potter fan than I am, please correct me.
So we can't get Gambon back then?
No, it won't be Gambon, no.
I saw someone on Twitter say, which I think is the perfect choice, Jared Harris.
I mean, it does make a certain amount of sense, doesn't it? And it's a very elegant solution, isn't it?
Mm.
Because obviously, it's just of Richard Harris, who played the original Dumbledore.
Oh, is he Richard Harris's son?
Yeah? Are you?
Yeah.
You're messing with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just saying, for anybody who didn't know.
No.
Okay.
But I was. Okay. But also.
Yeah.
Ben Chaplin.
No.
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 Okay.
With all due Chaplin respect to Ben
Chaplin. Is he related to Ben Chaplin in some way? Because there are chaplains.
There's Una Chaplin.
There's Una Chaplin. There's Geraldine Chaplin. There's Maisie Chaplin. Right, so I've got something.
Okay.
50 Shades Darker.
Yes.
Has been rated R by the MPAA for, and I quote, strong, erotic, sexual content. Some graphic nudity and language. Now, the first film received an R rating as well for raunch and rumpy pumpy. strong sexual content, including dialogue, some unusual behaviour. So we have to discern from this that it's just usual behaviour in 50 Shades Darker.
Good.
Yeah.
Missionary only.
Yes. No more than 3 thrusts.
Oh, good Lord.
Why are you looking at me now? Staring at me.
Why am I looking at you? Drumming my fingers on the on the top of the desk. Because I'm trying not to make a joke about my wife. I've mentioned her. Because I didn't want to do that because of the drinking game.
Okay.
So there we go. So it's been rated R. Are we happy about that?
We are entirely unsurprised.
Mission Impossible 6.
Yeah.
It's back on.
Yeah, it is.
It's back on, everybody.
Fuse has been lit.
Boop. That was my impression of a fuse being lit. Boop. It's all very, very exciting. It's been dated for July 2017. No, sorry. July 27, 2018, which is the same date that Warner Brothers were looking at for Aquaman. Although that might change. There may not be an Aquaman by that point, or there may be, or who knows, anyone. But yes, Chris McQuarrie, having left the project, is now back on the project. And lots of people are coming back from the original? From the last one, Rogue Nation. So it's all very, very exciting. I look forward to that. And I look forward to the 24-hour spoiler special podcast that we're going to do.
Yes.
As well.
What tall things are there left for Tom Cruise to
Stephen Merchant.
Oh, his biggest challenge yet.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
What's happening? Get off me! Get off me! He'd say in an accent that sounded like Stephen Merchant.
Okay, that could work. Yeah. Everest. We haven't had an action scene on the top of Everest.
Have we not?
Well, not really. I mean, there was Everest, but it doesn't feel like it's right to call that an action scene, as it was more a disaster movie.
Yeah. Everest just made a cameo recently in
Doctor Strange, but it wasn't really an action scene.
You know, I really see the mountain as a character in that film.
Thanks, Chris.
What else could he climb up that is tall?
Eiffel Tower, but it's been done. Blackpool Tower. He might be on something.
Hey, there you go.
Hey.
Absolutely.
Get Ethan Hunt on the slotties.
Be amazing, wouldn't it?
Gotta find more 2Ps.
Yeah. Yeah, he has to infiltrate a stag do.
Oh, how about that statue of Christ the Redeemer in Rio? I don't know.
Has there not been an action scene on that? I feel like there must have been.
I mean, even Fast and Furious were in the neighbourhood, but they didn't drive up the hill. So
It's a lot of effort.
Still wide open.
They didn't do any sightseeing while they
were there. It's a lot of effort. Yeah. It's got to be something tall. Or he could go small. He could just, you know.
Yeah, no.
No?
No. It's ooh, Mariana's Trench, though. He could go, like, deep. That would be the alternative.
Mission Impossible 6. Tom Cruise goes deep. Right. So I'm excited about that. What else is happening that we're excited about? Lots of things.
The Simpsons has been renewed for 2 more seasons. It's going up to its 30th season, I believe, and at this point will now be the longest-running scripted primetime show in US television history.
That is correct. Beating...
Gunsmoke,
yes.
In 2 different ways.
Yes.
Do you want me to nerd out about this?
Go on.
All right, so Gunsmoke is tied for the longest running live action TV show in the States, over here, Coronation Street, beats all. But with Law & Order, which both had 20 seasons, and if Law & Order hadn't been cancelled, stupid, God damn it, stupid Jack McCoy just cut off in the prime of his life.
Just breathe, Chris. Remember to breathe.
It would have beaten the record and gone to 21. Now, Gunsmoke also holds records for the highest number of episodes from a live-action TV series, and that will be surpassed by The Simpsons. The Simpsons have already beaten Gunsmoke for a number of seasons, but because it's not live-action, you know, blah, 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 blah. So, there you go. Exciting times.
Good.
Yeah, bad day to be James Arness, though. Ha-ha, take that.
Okay. Deadpool.
I've really got it in for dead people in this week's
really
podcast.
It's quite harsh.
Yeah. Actually, I think I've caught your rage.
You've got a whiff of rage.
Yeah, I think I have.
Oh my God, it's like the beginning of 28 Days Later.
It is. But we need to remember, is it everything's fine?
Everything's fine. Definitely fine.
It's just okay.
Nothing's gone wrong.
Hey, we were talking about dead people and we were talking about franchises and how many you need to make a franchise, which brings me neatly to Deadpool.
Hey,
not really neat. The sequel's currently obviously in development, having some complications, what with Tim Miller leaving and everything. But it is still going ahead, and Fox are already looking forward to a third movie, which could potentially see Daredevil. No, I keep saying that. No.
That's amazing. You genuinely do that.
I can't stop it. Anyway, they both wear red suits. What's a girl to do? Anyway, Deadpool number 3 could see Deadpool teaming up with X-Force.
Daredevil.
Deadpool. Don't do that to me.
Deadpool. X-Force. Okay.
So that's kind of interesting. There's been rumours of an X-Force movie for a while and it's never really happened. And it might be a slightly kind of backdoor way to kind of freshen up the X-Men universe.
Because they say that Deadpool 2 will feature Cable.
Exactly.
Won't it?
I've no idea which X-Force lineup we're looking at. I don't know.
They're also looking to cast Domino as well, aren't they? And she's been in
X-Force. Yeah, but the actress they choose keeps falling over.
Oh God!
So
maybe they should get really Keira Knightley. She's Domino Harvey. She's a bounty hunter.
My name is Domino Harvey. I'm a bounty hunter. Oh, flashbacks.
So you know that's a thing that's still happening. More to the point, we've got Logan coming up in the early months of next year, which
it's all very, very exciting. You know, if Fox do want to cast someone in that role,
as Wolverine?
No, Domino.
As Domino, yeah.
I believe. She'll arrive promptly within 30 minutes or your money back. Dominoes.
Yeah, we got it. Please stop. Hey, Pacific Rim 2 is about to start filming, but it's not called Pacific Rim 2. Not really.
No?
No, it has a title confirmed, and that title is Pacific Rim: Maelstrom. Which is a maelstrom. Good word that people don't use enough. Not male as in
not
like mailroom. No. Male as in M-A-E-L. Maelstrom. Like a big mess.
Mm.
Like a big sort of whirlpool.
Mm. Good.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's happening.
Good.
There
cool.
You go.
Happening right now in Sydney.
Yeah.
John Boyega is there. When's his birthday?
Is he not going to be back? Are you worried?
I'm worried. Because it's a big birthday for him, isn't it, as well? It's a big one for old John Boyega. Let me just see. Yeah, he'd be 20. No, it's March. It's a March. God, was it March? He came in. It must have been. So he's got plenty of time. Plenty of time. So, yeah, John, if you're listening to this, and I know you are, come back. Come back to the Emperor office for your birthday on the 17th of March, 2017. And we'll buy you cake. Or we'll get a Domino's.
Just you're really hoping for a free Domino's out of this, aren't you?
I'm not. I am now. I am now, absolutely.
Two very quick last things, because we're going on and on.
Sizzler,
and on.
Please.
Jurassic Chicken World strippers. Sequel is looking for Toby Jones and Rafe Spall for miscellaneous roles that will presumably see them eaten by dinosaurs. I mean,
Jones survives that movie, I will be amazed. I'm going to put it right now. Every listener of the Empire podcast, I bet you £10. Well, hang on to this.
No, don't do that.
No, that's a stupid, stupid idea.
10p.
No, that's even more stupid. I'm not very good at maths. In fairness. All right.
Okay.
I bet you two, Helen and John, okay. Not the listeners, £5 each.
Okay.
Okay.
That yeah, Toby Jones.
But I agree with you.
Okay, then we're all good.
I also agree with you.
That means I get to save £10 and I can put that towards my lunchtime Domino's. Or
fantastic.
Maybe get to send me one for free.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Anyway, I mean, Toby Jones does kind of have Dino Chow written all over him, and Rafe Spall.
He doesn't have met him.
Not literally, Chris.
Oh right, okay.
And Rafe Spall, yeah, I don't fancy his chances either. But you know, he's a lovely man, so I hope he goes out on a high note. I don't know. A screaming dinosaur.
I hope he does. I hope he plays an opera singer who gets eaten.
You know, we haven't had dinosaurs in an opera house yet, and I really think that could work. The closest we had was that Madison Square Garden bit in Godzilla, the Emmerich one, but let's leave that aside. And in TV news, very quickly, a couple of things. Big Bang Theory is planning a Young Sheldon spin-off. Presumably the end of season finale, we'll see his mother taking him to get checked that he's not crazy, and him producing his famous piece of paper that he has to prove that he isn't actually a madman. I don't know. And Stranger Things, it's been confirmed that season 2 will jump ahead a year in time, which is just as well because the cast will have aged a year by the time they make it. So that makes a certain amount of sense.
Also, yes. I was just seeing there on your page as well that the cast, the Defenders, is swelling.
Indeed.
It really is. It really is swelling. And now Elodie Young is going to be back as Elektra from Daredevil.
It was one of the best things in Daredevil season 2, so that's a good piece of news.
And Foggy Nelson's back as well to mope around and argue with Matt Murdock a little bit more, so that's exciting. I'm just excited about the Defenders because I think we might finally see what the reaction was to Karen Page's appalling article.
What is it to be a hero? What does it mean?
I muse.
You're a bit Godfather.
I did, didn't I?
It's weird. Yeah. So that's right. About it for
that
news,
is about
I think.
It.
Yeah, I think we've discussed about 16 trillion stories.
Oh, no, I'll tell you what we haven't discussed.
Oh, God.
One last thing. This happened last week. Bryan Singer is to direct the Freddie Mercury biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody, and it'll star Mr. Robot himself, Fisher Stevens from Short Circuit.
No.
No, it'll star Rami Malek from Mr. Robot.
Okay, I mean, that doesn't seem like the world's worst piece of casting. I would say he's kind of good.
Yeah, physically, I think there's a resemblance there, isn't there?
Yeah, he'll need to grow the appalling moustache, but, you know, he could look the part.
Pretty didn't have an appalling moustache.
It was appalling.
It was a fine moustache.
It was the 80s. It was a simpler time.
I know, but I
people
just
had
don't
moustaches
like
back then, Helen. You have to get with the program.
Thanks, Chris, for 80s-splaining me.
Yes, I've been Mr. Fahrenheit splaining you. Intriguing. Intriguing. See Bryan Singer doing something else. So it's all very exciting. Do we have a guest?
Yes.
All right, let's do that. So Jim Jarmusch's latest film, Patterson, opens here in a couple of weeks' time, on the 25th of November. But because that podcast is booked up, and because next week's podcast is booked up, and because, frankly, we're so excited about it and its star, one Mr. Adam Driver, a.k.a. the Irish Star Wars villain Kyle Oren himself, that we decided to bring it to your ears now. So here it is, in your ears, Helen O'Hara talking to Kyle Oren. Oh, sorry, Adam Driver.
There
Adam Driver and his big hair. Enjoy.
Adam Driver, welcome to the Empire podcast.
Yeah, thanks
for joining us. Patterson, Jim Jarmusch film, you play, let me get this right, the guy's name is Patterson. Mm-hmm. He lives in a town called Patterson, and his favorite book is a book called Patterson. Is this correct?
Yeah, that's pretty, that's on. That's right on.
It's thematic, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. And he is sort of a bus driver by day, but also a poet. And I believe you learned to drive a bus.
I did, yeah.
Wow. So you have a fallback career if this whole acting thing goes wrong.
Yeah, I can work for the MTA. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. How long did that take?
It wound up being like a 3-month process because the written test is pretty easy or not. It can happen pretty fast. But I was working at the time, so I was trying to find pockets for the driving test. And you have to, you know, get a certain amount of hours so you feel comfortable taking the test. And you have to plan when you're going to take the test months in advance. Uh-huh. So if I would have failed the driving test, then I wouldn't have been able to drive in the movie because we were starting driving the next week. So pressure was on. But it wound up being 3 months of trying to parallel park in Queens.
I can imagine that's pretty difficult. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I learned how to drive in the Midwest, and I never met. Mike, I always think it's such a feat when someone learns how to drive in New York.
Yes.
And then does it, but learning how to parallel park and or just drive a bus in general in New York is an exercise in patience.
And does it make it a lot easier for a film like this because you have that? You know, you're able to drive it. You don't have to sort of think about, I guess Jim doesn't have to think about shots quite as hard as he would if there was a sort of a driver double and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's lots of reasons. That, you know, that maybe we can get something better, you know, even if it's just a couple shots that we wouldn't have been able to get, you know, because you'd have to substitute with somebody else. It's also his physical life is very important, mm-hmm. you know, in this. I think it's also like you can't really control much on a film set or in acting in general. So I always like to have something physical that I feel like I can have a false sense of control. I think it's that too. But also because everything is very, you know, regimented and is very much a creature of habit, and his physical life is well worn. And we're trying to tell the story of years of doing the same thing and mm-hmm. with only a couple months to shoot that. Similar to memorizing lines that, you know, I feel that for me, I know that I like to know the lines so well that I can forget them, you know, right. So there I'm not thinking about lines when we're doing a scene. I'm trying to be available for the, you know, the other people you're with and same thing with the physical life. I don't want to suddenly get on the day, be around a bunch of buttons and levers and not know the physical life of a character and be distracted with that. You know, he's very much, it's purposeful that his physical life is on autopilot. So yeah. It allows him to kind of drift and pay attention to details that he normally wouldn't, or pay attention to details, I guess, end of sentence.
Yeah, I know, it's true. And I think it was interesting for me watching the film that at the beginning, his poetry sounds almost absurd. You know, the first poem about Ohio blue tip matches.
You're right.
It sounds almost not even childish because kids' poetry always rhymes and, you know, it's sort of sing-songy. And this one felt a bit different. But by the end of the film, you're just sort of swept up in it a little bit. It's almost like you've developed an appreciation for poetry just by watching this film. So I imagine maybe making it was a similar effect, but maybe more so.
Well, I mean, I had a very elementary knowledge of poetry. Like, I knew that, like, I liked E.E. Cummings, you know, and he has his poem Chicago that I really liked. And there, like, I knew, you know, Ginsberg's Howl, and mm-hmm. then I'd been to a lot of poetry readings and things. But I didn't understand it on the level that Jim did until this, through this, I got to know. Have a better relationship, you know, like Frank O'Hara's lunch poems and William Carlos Williams, Beyond This Is Just to Say, and Ron Padgett, who wrote the poems for this, you know, is very much a part of that. That a title which he, I think he hates, is the New York School of Poets, you know, which I really like.
Mm-hmm. It was cool. It's a different kind of, I don't know, a different kind of feel than I'd kind of come across, or maybe even expected going into the film somehow.
Oh, well, I think maybe because, well, I don't know why, but Jim and I share an allergy to hear, when you hear poems being read out loud, there's always a tone of self-importance that's attached to them. Is it like, this is a poem, and it's very special, and they're always like sentimental, and I hate hearing poems like that. I always find it more effective with poetry or acting or anything when the emotion is left out of it, that the whoever's presenting it is leaving the experience for the audience as opposed to them, they themselves. So, you know, it's always easier to hear. So yeah, in reading them, we just tried to make the points and not worry so much about what the audience, the meaning or the emotion that the audience will attach to it, because there's no way to control that.
It's interesting because I go see a lot of Shakespeare plays because I set myself a task of seeing them all.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing because there are the people who are very important. This is Shakespeare, you should listen.
Yeah,
and there are the people who make it
makes
feel
sense.
Like... makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and they leave the emotion for you,
yeah,
the audience, which, you know, as opposed to them.
That's exactly.
Right.
On a slightly less highbrow note, I've got to ask about Marvin slash Nelly, Marvin, the dog.
Right.
Who, I mean, that...
may she rest in peace.
I know. I heard that she died.
Yeah she did.
But what a mark to leave on the world, because that is one of the great animal performances.
It is, yeah. Best people to work... I mean, I shouldn't say best people to work with, because they're great scene partners in this movie, but... dogs and kids, you just don't know what they're gonna do, you know. It's very exciting. that sounded kind of strange, but they, they're very unpredictable, and I always imagine those scenes, but what you don't imagine is the trainer who's just off camera screaming, like, you know, cookie to try to get someone's attention, and they have to act in the midst of it. It's never a dull day with the dog on set.
Yeah, we did a panel once about animal acting.
Oh, really?
For a live event that Empire did, and apparently to get a Rottweiler to bark ferociously, to look absolutely terrifying, they wave a little ball on a string.
Yeah.
Which is just the greatest thing ever, you know.
That's so great.
I also have to ask, there's an amazing scene in this movie, because Patterson has this gorgeously loving relationship, mm-hmm, with his, is it wife or girlfriend? I wasn't 100% sure.
Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows?
But with Laura.
With Laura.
And she makes him one meal in particular where it's obviously dreadful.
Right.
So I was just going to ask about you, what was your worst meal ever that someone's cooked for you? Did you go through that experience?
Oh, this is so bad to call out people, but I don't want to say. I had a lot of steak, I think, growing up that was just overcooked. So it was very chewy. So I didn't really like steak until, you know, until I was older. Mm-hmm. So, but it was a lot of bad meals, I guess. Yeah.
But I think that's a thing, isn't it? When you love someone, you sort of go, this is lovely, dear.
Yeah, this is nice.
This is nice. Yeah,
thanks,
thank
Mom.
You. Thanks so much. Naming no names.
Right.
And Patterson also has a military background. Was that something that was added in to reflect your background, or was that already sort of in the script?
It was not in the script. He added it when I said I would do it, and he explained why in a way that I made sense to me, that I loved was it's addressed, but it's mentioned at the beginning, but it's not mentioned really again, you know. And there's a lot of things that happen throughout the movie that are, you know, he's a bus driver, but he, you know, what does a bus driver act like, you know? It doesn't define him. He's also a poet. That doesn't really define him either. He's all these kind of things that maybe as an audience subverts your expectations. You're assuming something is going to happen because of these things are known, but he's a person who happens to have been in the military, who happens to drive a bus, who happens to be into, writing poetry. It's not defined by any one of them.
Yeah. But that is the tension of the film, though, because there were so many moments where I thought, oh, I know where this is going now. And
right.
I was always wrong.
Right,
pretty
right.
Much.
Yeah, I love that about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apart from that, the main action needs to play listening. You know, that's really I think, a rare opportunity to get, but also that it's a relationship that's good. You know, it's like a marriage or a whatever it is that where they give each other mutual space and respect, yeah. You know, and that's and a big event happens that's not really a big event, you know, and the humor in that is that that's definitely a testament to Jim's sense of humor, but I think it's just really funny that without giving it away, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Although a few reviews have done so, people listening should be careful there. I wanted to ask as well about Silence that you've got coming up. I've read the novel and it's stunning.
Yeah, right.
And this is something that Martin Scorsese has been working on for 28 years. 28.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how was the experience of working with him?
I mean, all very surreal. I mean, similar to Jim in that you meet these people who you've admired their movies forever, and you, it could very easily be an environment where you show up on set and they, you feel like they would be justified in being like, okay, I've thought about this for 28 years. This is what we're going to do. You're going to go here. And that, but that's not the way it is at all. They still have this sense of, you really see them as young filmmakers in a room with their friends trying to figure out how to make the best version of the story in the time that they have, you know, and using their resources to do it. So even though he's wanted to make it for so long, he definitely showed up on the day and was willing to throw all of it away and sacrifice to something better or that was happening in the moment. And I think as, you know, a young actor watching someone at that point in his career still have that kind of collaborative spirit is very, or way of working is very inspiring. Mm. You know,
you hear that, I think, about many of the greats, about the Spielbergs and the Scorseses,
yeah.
And those guys, that they're still really excited by it.
All of, oh yeah, they still have a youthful ambition and trying to get it, not necessarily right, but do the best version of it, you know, and still openly, you know, not tortured, I should say, but openly, you know, unsure. And that's, is really exciting. And I've got to work with all these great people, and that's, that would be the main theme, I think, that, I mean, along with, you know, specificity and storytelling and all, like they're very aware of the story that they're trying to tell, but that they're all very collaborative, you know.
Yeah.
And also, does Scorsese, maybe even more so than most, is makes his films, well, that's not necessarily true, but they're very personal, you know. Mm. And after I've worked with him, I, you know, go back and watch his movies and see so much of him in all of his movies, and that's why they're so good, because they're so personal and specific.
Yeah. And this one is a fascinating kind of moral story as well. I mean, so Father, is it Garpe? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Garupe.
Actually. Garupe. Yeah. He's kind of the perfect priest in terms of the dogma and the beliefs of the time. He's the guy who seems to have it, I don't know, figured out.
A little. I didn't.
At first.
Yeah. I actually maybe thought the opposite of him, where it's, he's full of doubt. In the end, he kind of, yeah, I would say maybe, yeah, you're right. But what I liked about him the most is I thought a lot about St. Peter, you know, how he, it's just questioning everything. Like he doesn't take anything almost at face value. He's totally, which I totally get. It's like a metaphor for any kind of like acting or poetry or to relate it back to Silent, or Patterson, I guess. But just the crisis of faith that happens along with anything, doing anything that's anything that you believe in. You know, he's made a commitment to be a priest and be, you know, with the Jesuits. But along the way, he's like, what are we doing here? Why are we here? Is this even having an effect? And that I relate to. It's like, why am I an actor? Why am I, you know, holding this thing in my head, like what is anybody watching this? Does this mean anything? Does it not mean anything? I'm away from my family. Why am I doing this? You know, like I'm bad at it. You know, like all of these things, that kind of crisis of faith, I think, is really play.
Interesting. Yeah.
Theme to explore.
Yeah,
I guess.
Fair enough. I'm going to ask very quickly about episode 8, because I know you basically can't tell me anything, but maybe you can help me with one key issue that I had coming out of episode 7.
Okay.
Does Kylo Ren have thousands of tiny hair dryers in his helmet? Because I've never seen a man more resistant to hat hair.
He, well, you know, he's very powerful. So that
he uses the force.
Yeah, he uses the force, and that even goes to every hair follicle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a powerful guy.
The force is really a useful thing to have.
Doesn't mess around, yeah.
Are you sick of being in the UK now after all this filming here?
No. It feels very comfortable, actually, coming back, because you've been here for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Have you got much? Are you guys finished? Have you much more to do? Mostly finished?
Finished the second one, yeah.
Fantastic. So yeah. Gearing up for the next one.
I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Adam Driver there will be tackling Patterson in 2 weeks' time. Helen is still a buzz after that interview because you like the Kylo Ren, don't you?
I do. I didn't tell him that I thought he was better than Vader because, you know, I thought he'd probably have the same reaction you did. But...
which is denounce you as an unbeliever.
But no, he was a delight, actually. It was really, really nice.
All right, awesome. So let's move on to movie reviews now. The big film this week is Arrival, which stars Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner and Forest Whitaker, directed by Denis Villeneuve. Have at it, Hills.
I will. This is the film that Amy Adams should win her Oscar for this year if she wins over the likes of Natalie Portman. After last week's Nocturnal Animals, this
is... She ain't
gonna win. Well, you never know.
Ain't gonna win.
It could happen.
Ain't
She's got the
win.
Narrative.
All anyway. Films are narrative.
What?
Except for the ones of David Lynch. Oh, you mean... yes, I know.
DiCaprio's narrative. Anyway.
Oh, the DiCaprio narrative.
Let's get back to the review.
Oh, yes.
Arrival is a sort of a science fiction story. So we meet Amy Adams' linguist. She's a college professor, and she is called in by the army, by the government, to deal with the arrival of aliens. So these strange ships are hovering at various spots, apparently randomly chosen all over the world, and someone needs to figure out how to communicate with these beings. So every, I think it's 18 hours, they open up a place in their ship. You can go inside and there's a sort of a viewing gallery where they can stay on their side of the glass in their atmosphere. We can stay on the other side in ours, and discussions can be held. So she's basically sent in with Jeremy Renner's physicist on the basis that once they do establish some means of communication, maths and physics are the universal language, so they figure that he can, you know, have meaningful conversations at that point. The two of them go in with, you know, assorted military bods to back them up, and they have to try and figure out this language. And they're working with teams from all over the world who are doing the same thing with all of their alien ships nearby, and they're all exchanging information and trying to figure out the alien language. And basically, it's a sort of a very cerebral take on First Contact. This is the if Independence Day is at one end of the spectrum, this is the other end of it. It's up there with sort of, it's maybe not quite as weird as Solaris, but it's in that part of the alien contact spectrum. And it's really fascinating, the kind of stuff that it deals with. It just deals with trying to decipher language, trying to find common ground with someone you have no common ground with, and how seeing things from someone else's point of view can fundamentally change your reality as well. But it does it in much trickier, more interesting, more exciting ways than maybe I'm kind of explaining there. I thought this was phenomenal. It's a great, great performance from Adams, because she is clearly, you'll see why at the beginning of the film, but she is clearly grief-stricken, traumatized, and you know, troubled before she goes into this incredibly draining process of trying to figure out something that the whole future of the world may depend on. And it's kind of her toughness and her kind of ability to engage her intellect in the midst of all that and try and, you know, figure this thing out for the sake of all mankind and potentially all alien kind as well. It's really interesting, and both as a character study and as a piece of science fiction, because this is, I think, the science fiction that often gets overlooked at the movies. This is the thinky intellectual science fiction which doesn't necessarily make great movies. This is sort of the 9 billion names of God. This is some of the robot stories that haven't been adapted for probably very good reasons. They wouldn't make good movies. And it's always interesting to get into those kind of meaty concepts, because at the root of it, I think a lot of science fiction, the best science fiction, is all about what humanity is and how we interact with the universe rather than anything else. And this absolutely gets into those kind of questions. So I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this is possibly in my top three films of the year. It's really fascinating. It's one of those films that I was thinking about for hours afterwards, days afterwards. Yeah. One of my favourite scenes is where Amy Adams, who plays essentially like a linguist, she's a language expert, and she has a sentence and she breaks it down word by word and explains the complications, the complexities of trying to translate this single, very simple sentence to an alien species who have never come across any sort of word-based language before.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating, and it makes you think about language and communication and society and, you know, what would happen if we had extraterrestrial beings enter our worlds. I mean, it is one of those sci-fis that really makes you sort of, ponder for a long time. Mm. And what's great about Denis Villeneuve, who did Sicario and he did Prisoners and he's doing Blade Runner 2, is that he sort of works within these genre boundaries, but he doesn't talk down to the audience. He's not afraid of presenting quite sort of weighty concepts and getting the audience to sort of decipher it for themselves.
There is one guy I know of who went to see this and did not understand the ending of the movie. Mm. Like, fundamentally, there's a fundamental shift.
Yes.
I wouldn't call it twists, which is why I mention it, because I wouldn't mention if it was a twist, but there's a fundamental shift in perspective, I think, towards the end of the film, and it isn't over-explained. I thought it was crystal clear, but a couple of people have had trouble with it. So if you come out of this and you haven't, you feel like you don't understand anything at the end of the film, do have a read of the short story synopsis, which is on Wikipedia. Mm. It's a little bit of a cheat, but it will explain what exactly just happened.
It's interesting. I think this is a film which rewards repeat viewings in a big way.
Definitely.
I think going in, like the opening scenes, I was watching and thinking, oh, this is quite cliched. This is a bit stupid. And by the end of it, it made total sense.
Yeah.
I don't want to say too much, but it's the sort of film which pulls the rug under you a little bit. So what you think you're watching is not what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And it does it in a very clever way. It plays with you know, sort of cinematic conventions.
Yes. Yeah. But it's clever with emotion, and it's not it's not just clever in the way that some slightly sterile kind of sci-fi films made by certain directors can be. I think this one has a lot more heart than some Christopher Nolan films.
I was going to say, who could you possibly be referring to? Okay, so
five stars
for Arrival. I liked it a lot. I didn't think it was a five for me. But hey, I'm weird.
On your own.
I know. I'm on my own. I'm not on my own.
You're kind of on
I'm
your
looking
own.
Around. I'm completely on my own. It didn't move me.
Oh,
it didn't move me.
You're a monster.
I am a monster. I am utterly without empathy. I could be... No, I'm not going to go there. It's very, very good, and she is fantastic, Amy Adams, and Renner's good as well.
Renner's very good,
and it's wonderfully directed, and it's beautifully put together by Denis Villeneuve and his team. I don't know, it just didn't get me there, guys. It didn't get me there. Maybe I need a second viewing, because Inside Out didn't get me there either. You know, initially, first time around. Second time around, it did.
Monster.
Yeah, monster. The short story it's based on is very good as well, though.
Yeah, it is great.
It's really dense, though. I mean, it's all about linguistics, and it's very... You have to... Oh, I need to read that back again, because that was a little bit... What? What? It's like a textbook. And they take that stuff out of this movie, and they make it a bit more action-oriented as well.
Yeah, it's not by any means an action movie, but no. it keeps moving. It's pacing.
Yeah, there's peril in this, and there isn't in the short story, which is interesting. Yes, five stars for Arrival. Very, very good. It is one of the year's best. Also out this week, we have Ewan McGregor's directorial debut, American Pastoral, which also stars Ewan McGregor and Jennifer Connelly and Dakota Fanning, who I don't think I've seen on the big screen for ages. Where's she been? She's probably been around.
College,
that sort of stuff. And this is an adaptation of the Philip Roth novel, John Nugent.
Yes, this is an adaptation of the Philip Roth novel. And if anyone's ever read that novel, you'll know it's got a reputation for being unadaptable. It's a very complex novel. It's told over multiple decades. It spans from roughly the 1940s to the present day. It's told through several different narrators. One of those narrators, you're not even sure if it's really reality, if it's just a sort of imagined reality. So it's a very, very tough book to adapt for cinema. Very, very complex. And I think any director would have trouble adapting it, let alone a first-timer like Ewan McGregor, who obviously is very experienced in cinema, but he's never been behind the camera before. And I do feel it is a challenge that he could not quite meet. So the basic story is, so Ewan McGregor plays this guy called the Swede. That's his nickname. He's basically a Jewish American in the 1950s. He's sort of like the high school prom king. He's like the alpha male. He's the quarterback. He has a sort of perfect life in rural New Jersey. He marries Jennifer Connelly, who's the sort of Gentile beauty queen, and they have a daughter together. They who called Mary, who grows up to become Dakota Fanning. And, you know, life is good for a long time. And then the 1960s happens. Mary gets mixed up in turbulent politics of the time. And things start to go wrong for the Swedes. And I mean, you know, all teenagers go off the rails a little bit, but not all teenagers blow up post offices. So this is a bit more of an extreme version of a teenage troubles, let's say. And then Mary goes missing, and the rest of the film essentially is the Swede trying to track down his daughter and trying to get to grips with what's happened to his family. The whole family deteriorates as a result of this tragedy. And in the book, it's sort of almost played as an analogy for America as a whole. There's a lot of complex metaphors. There's a sort of commentary on American politics in the 1960s. In this film, it's basically a very drab melodrama. There's not a lot that's exciting or interesting. It starts off quite well, and then it becomes just Ewan McGregor hunting for his daughter and crying a lot. And it just feels a bit flat. There's nothing sort of that compels you to watch it. It's you know, it's very handsomely done. It's a period piece, and it looks very nice. And Ewan McGregor seems to have a good eye, but I just don't think it translates to the screen. One of the problems is the book is very internal. So Philip Roth writes very long, thoughtful narrator type. Yeah. Passages. His prose is very dense. That's all lost in this adaptation. And so to an extent, it's not really Ewan McGregor's fault. I think that's just inevitable in adapting a book like this. But I just don't think it works. And I think anyone would have trouble. And it's a shame.
It's actually the first of two Philip Roth adaptations in the next 2 weeks. There's Indignation next week as well, which is James Seamus's first film. So, I mean, you've got to hand it to first-time directors for tackling a famously difficult-to-adapt writer. But, you know, yeah.
There's been a few Philip Roth adaptations, and I don't think any of them have been all that successful. You know, he's an amazing writer, and maybe he doesn't really belong on screen. So, it's 2 stars, unfortunately, for American Pastoral. I wanted to like it, and it was, you know, there's a very sort of earnest intention to it. I don't think it's not like a laughable disaster. It just doesn't work. Fair sadly. Enough.
Another rage-fueled career-ending rant. From John Nugent there. 2 stars in for American Pastoral. Also out this week, we have 100 Streets, produced by and starring Idris Elba. It's an anthology movie, a triptych about a number of Londoners whose lives intersect. Movie is fine. Just fine. Nothing to worry about. It's 3 stars for that one. But another film that's worth your time this week, if you have a spare 6.5 hours, is the remastered, restored, refurbished, rescued, everything version of Abel Gance's 1927 movie about Napoleon. It's called Napoleon. I believe it's at the BFI this week and art house cinemas around the country. It was restored. It was found by a guy called Kevin Brown, though, who's written a book about his journey and his quest to restore this movie. And it's 6.5 hours, pretty much, give or take. But it's all about Napoleon.
But they do give you tea breaks, so it's important to mention.
I mean, it's not a movie, is it, really? Let's be honest. It's a mini-series. It's like...
Well, it's binge-watching, isn't it?
Yeah, but they didn't have those in 1927. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Well, we got to present it to people in a way that's palatable now. So go and binge-watch Napoleon.
There you go.
Right.
At the BFI and other cinemas around the country.
I mean, it's only half an hour longer than the Gilmore Girls films are going to be. Yeah. So, like... And it's shorter than your average Netflix odyssey.
Very similar in content as well to the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, a few hundred thousand more extras, I think, but pretty similar.
Of course, I haven't seen Napoleon myself yet because I don't have the spare 6.5 hours, but I haven't even seen Luke Cage yet, so I'm going to get around to watching that. Either of those, especially when I've got to catch up on this week's MasterChef The Professionals.
I think I may have spotted where your time is going.
Do you think?
Yeah.
All right.
I've got a clue. We'll discuss it afterwards.
All right. Okay. So there you go. Anyway, don't do as I do. Do as I say. Napoleon, 6.5 hours. Right. And that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more Film Related Fun. We'll be joined by David Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike, stars of The United Kingdom, which is out November 25th. But we're bringing everything forward from November 25th because it's a big jamboree.
Hooray.
It's very, very exciting. Oh, and I say, join us next week for more Film Related Fun. I may not be here. I may be taking my first week off of the year.
This is exciting.
I thought I'd wait until the end of the year before I started taking a holiday. Might come in. I'm not sure yet. We'll see. Got a lot of stuff to do. Anyway,
catch up.
But if I
am
at home, I'll be at home in my pants, as opposed to being here in my pants, which is obviously...
We keep asking.
I wanted to give you guys a break. Right, until then... Because who knows, you might be doing this next week.
Okay.
So, see what I did this week? Don't do that. don't do this. Do your own thing. Until then, it's farewell from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from John.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to destroy my copy of Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. Why? No reason. Everything's fine. Just fine. Nothing to worry about. It's all good. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.